I really didn't do any research before becoming a hat maker. If I would have, I probably wouldn't have had the courage to do it. In order to make great quality hats, I think you have to slow down. And in order to be a present mom, you can't be here all the time. And those two things just went hand in hand. I have actually said to people, listen, if it's not your favorite thing to grab when you walk out the door, I wouldn't spend this much money on it. Buy it only if you love it. I don't advertise. I liken myself to a beer joint in the middle of nowhere that serves the best food and the best drinks, and only 10 people can fit inside. There's always a line at the door. So I'm struggling with trying to say very small batch and also grow, where to let people in to help and where not to.
Welcome to the Soft Focus podcast. I'm so happy you're here. My name is Corinne McAndrews, and I am a farmer and the founder of Late Bloomer Ranch. Several years ago, I started to notice that my farm thrived when I took a step back and started to embrace a more holistic worldview. I began to realize my farm was more than just transactions or dollar signs. It was a seemingly magical place with so much happening that I couldn't fully understand it. This led me to embrace complexity and begin to see the beauty in things even when they seem difficult. I started to understand the power of the idea that the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, and that by acting from a heart-centered place, we can accept the complexity of things and act in the best interest of the larger puzzle. I want to explore that and talk with other people across disciplines who are viewing the world that way and are looking for those very same connections, because that, I feel, provides peace, humility, and compassion, things that the world could use a lot more of today. I need to be constantly reminded of my important but small role in this bigger cycle. Thank you for being here and for joining me. Hi there. Welcome back to the Soft Focus podcast. Today's episode is a good one. It's about craft. It's about humility. It's about boundaries. It's about creativity. I'm speaking with Christy Singh Robertson of Singh Hat Company. She is a bespoke custom hatter here in the Tetons. She lives and works in Jackson, Wyoming, and makes custom hats for people all over the country. And our conversation spans from not only what drives her as a creative and how she started her business and her company, but also how she stays in touch with that creativity, and how she's used her business as a way to create a whole life for herself, and how the limitations, or what may have seemed at one point as limitations in her life as a mother, were actually gateways to creating a business with deeper layers of integrity and beauty and quality. We talk about how Christy learned how to make hats and how she got through some of the resistance of being new at something, the intuitive experience that led her to even want to learn the craft in the first place, why making hats slowly is better. And that really resonated with me. As you all know, the way that we farm is on the slow end of the spectrum. It's based in consistency and quality and integrity at every step of the way. And I found a lot of parallels there with the way that Christy has built her creative process, and how COVID and some of the limitations that COVID presented actually sent her business in a really positive new direction, and how all of this kind of translates back into her life as a mother and a woman, and how by caring for herself at a deeper and more intentional level, she's been able to build something incredible professionally. And although that's a message that I think several people share, it never ceases to amaze me how new and real it sounds whenever I'm connecting with someone who's explaining how much their own commitment to themselves has helped their business, has helped their families, has helped their loved ones. I encourage you all to listen to Christy and her wisdom and her knowledge and her story as she shares with us all the changes that she's made on the inside and the outside, and how that contributes to these truly incredible hats, these pieces of art, these family heirlooms to be passed down from generation to generation. I really loved this conversation, and I think you will too. Enjoy. Hi, Christy. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Hi. Thanks for having me. Pardon my voice.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry that you're not feeling well, but I really appreciate you taking the time. I'm really excited to talk to you.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited.
I wanted to start by asking you, what's the ethos of Sing Hat Company?
Making wonderful, handmade, quality, slow batch hats.
How did you come to that? I read on your website that you had an intuitive hit one day that you had to take a hat making apprenticeship course. And did you just feel at that moment drawn to the slow batch hat world, or were you always good at following your intuition and you just kind of had a pattern of following those leads, or what was that like for you?
They hadn't come up that many times in my life, but you know, a handful, still only a handful. But I really always knew sort of that was the voice of God to me, and that it was almost not optional, but in a kind and loving way, and in a great, I'm going to steer you this way, not in a domineering type way. It wasn't presented as though it was this option. It was like a draw so strong that it was going to happen. But as far as the small batch portion of that goes, or part of that goes, I really didn't do any research before becoming a hat maker. If I would have, I probably wouldn't have had the courage to do it. I didn't realize it was a kind of a cutthroat world at that time. I haven't found that to be the fact now so much at all, but then it was more, and I really didn't know what direction I was going. And I think what decided that for me was I had just been practicing the anti-hustle for so many years after hustling so hard for so many years in a different industry. And I knew that my kids and family were going to have to come first. And so in order to make great quality hats, I think you have to slow down. And in order to be a present mom, you can't be here all the time. And those two things just went hand in hand.
Wow. I already have so many questions. Talk to me about when you knew that voice of God was not suggesting it, even though it wasn't harsh or pushy. I mean, what did that really feel like for you? Was it just that you kept seeing ads for the same apprenticeship everywhere, or people that you knew were talking about it? Or was it like coming up in your dreams? Like, how does that come across to you experientially?
Well, in the beginning, it was just so exciting. It was sort of like when I got the sort of call on my life to move out west from Arkansas, it was just like so out of the blue, but also so refreshing and exciting. I mean, it sounded just like such a new, fresh idea. But it actually took me 6 months to find an apprenticeship. So it wasn't like there was one being advertised.
Interesting.
I had to search a while to the point that I was kind of like, okay, if this is you, God, I'm going to need you to, you know, put something in my path here. I'm searching and this is causing me a bit of anxiety because I feel like I'm supposed to be walking down this road, yet it's not right in front of me. And so I'm going to kind of go about my business and I'm going to let you place these things right in front of me, which is exactly what happened. I ran into an old friend who knew about this idea of mine. She said, I've found a place you can go. And so I went there, and it's something I don't usually tell where, but you know, I went and started this whole thing. And then it was another year and some change before I was actually able to build a business out of it. Because I was a single mom at the time and I really didn't have a lot of funds. And that was the thing.
So even though it didn't make logical sense, you had the faith and you trusted your own process enough to just know that even from a hand, what I'm hearing you say, correct me if I'm wrong, is that even from a handful of experiences of these kinds of hand of God moments, you knew, okay, if I just stay in my zone and I listen to this and I ask for guidance, I can just do this one step at a time.
That's exactly right. And that's how the whole thing has unfolded. And not to say there hasn't been an insane amount of backbreaking and frustrating work.
Sure.
New work to learn. But yes, that's right. It has unfolded.
I know so little about millinery, but when you know, first were touching that beaver felt or whatever medium you were working with in this apprenticeship, was there some kind of click for you? For me, sometimes when I'm learning a new task, it's more humility than creativity. And I have to get over the hump before I experience any joy. And early in my life, I would quit things because I wouldn't have the patience or the stamina to get through the humility period to the point that I could have any attempt at creative expression with something. So when you reached that apprenticeship and you finally did it after 6 months of having it bat around in your mind, Were you able to have some kind of like click with it or synergy there? Or did that take time?
I wish that I could say it did, but I love the way you worded that. It really resonates with me. I quit so many things so early and earlier in my life as well because I couldn't shine at them. I wasn't perfect at it right away. And I refused to accept the humility that every new task takes. It takes humility to learn something new and put the time in and really not be good at something for a while. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened too. I wasn't good at it for a long time. I really probably wasn't great at it for a year or two. And I made a lot of hots in the first couple of years, all of which on every podcast I say, hey, if you're listening to this, you know, and you have a hat that I made that isn't great, please bring it back in and let me work on it again, you know. But definitely there was a giant humility piece and there still is. I mean, you know, so often I set out to do something new or I get my rear end handed to me. You know, I don't know what I'm doing and it's not good. It's not well done and takes a lot of practice. And yeah, for sure.
So where you are today with that process, how do you find the balance between continuing to hone your craft from that place of humility and learning and also feeling empowered to imbue your own sense of creativity and freedom and personality into what you do? Because I think that's what makes your hats so special is there's so much of you in them and they don't feel like a exercise in mimicry or chasing trends. They just feel like an authentic outcropping of your personal style and your personal lens. So how does that look for you when you're in it? And when did you start to feel that?
Thank you for those kind words. I think from the beginning, I wanted to do something that was sort of timeless. I've always been attracted to that look in fashion and home and otherwise. And so I knew I've never chased trends. If anything, I would say, this is kind of trendy, so it's ironic for me to say this. If anything, I would be looking backwards towards something more vintage. Mm-hmm. And I realize that's also a trend of its own lately, but I've sort of always been like that. And so I think from early on, I didn't really want to make anything that was too loud or flashy or, and I would also say, because it's a craft I didn't quit, because it's something I sort of had to go for it, for financial reasons and otherwise, and because it was a calling on my life, I wanted to make something that was beautiful on its own, without any embellishments, without any hat bands or pins or feathers, or without anyone else's art added to it. I wanted to make something that was beautiful by itself. So I think from the very beginning, just not wearing a lot of hat bands on my hats, you know, just trying to wear the hat as the art was probably the thing I was going for there.
I'm just wondering, did you have like a moment where you felt like, oh, this is working. I'm doing this. It's imperfect. It's flawed. It's living. It's breathing. But this is happening.
I did. You know, after the pandemic happened, I was in a little shop about a block down the road from me. I'd just done a little remodel on it. I'd expanded. And then the pandemic. And then my kids, like all kids, had to be home for quite a while. And I had the crappiest little internet in my shop and one tiny little couch and, you know, no sink to make food, like no way. And I thought, this is not where I'm having my kids' school and I'm not leaving them at home by themselves. And since I get to choose, I'm closing this shop and I moved my hat shop to my house. And I had it in my garage with all this really ugly, huge plastic around it so it wouldn't get all over everything, the sand and fur from the felt. And then in my upstairs apartment, I had like a little, like not really a showroom. It wasn't that. I mean, it was like, at least I could meet a client there. Mm. It was where I made magic there. And I had a couple of guys that came and helped me some here and there. But I really learned to make good hats there. I really focused on the art. And I had this beautiful slow pace, like everyone did, or not healthcare workers, but everyone else. And it was just so wonderful. And I thought, okay, I'm making good hats now. This is good. And I think it was just a combination of knowing I was there for my kids if they were home or when they got home or when they had to quarantine and stay home. You know, I say this all the time, but I loved being able to walk downstairs, put on a load of laundry, put a roast in the oven, go for a walk or a ski in the middle of the day with my husband or one of my good girlfriends. And I worked just around that. And I got really behind, but my health started being a lot better. And I felt proud.
I love that. I love that you were able to say it's worth being behind to get a better quality product in a way that is in integrity with who I am.
Yeah.
That's so much of why I wanted to talk to you. I love talking to mothers who are business owners because when I got pregnant, I can't tell you the first time, I can't tell you how many people were frankly very negative. You don't know how this is going to impact your life. How on earth are you going to run your farm? Have you really thought about this? And not that I need like a bunch of yes men running around. I'm fine. It's okay for people to have their own opinions. That's great. I'm still close with these people. No harsh words were had. But in my personal experience, as I'm pregnant with my second daughter, I feel like you could view motherhood as an obstacle to conducting business, or it could be an amazing opportunity to reconsider what we're even doing anyway and why. And I love listening to you, Christy, talk about how actually these restrictions on what you were doing were a gateway to a more authentic craft, a better craft, and one that just brought more to your life.
Well, that's well said. Thank you. You know, I think part of the thing, Corinne, is that early on, I really didn't want to work early. I wanted to be home with my kids all the time. My mother, sweet mother, had to work, you know, 1, 2, 3 jobs to care for us 4 girls. She was single most of the time. And I really just wanted to be present because she wasn't able to be. I got a divorce when my kids were young and it warranted me going to work much sooner than I wanted to. And I was still able to be home a lot with them. I was living in a little cabin and able to be, of my ex-husband's, he was so generous. And I was able to be, you know, with them so often. I had just a very low overhead. So I really didn't have to work a ton. And so I didn't really think I wanted to work a lot. As I got called out and had to do it, I've really discovered myself again that I'd lost until my kids were about 4 and 5 years old. And I started to learn how to try to balance that. And I'm still trying to learn how to do that.
Sometimes as mothers, we have, correct me if I'm wrong, if this isn't your experience, but mothers that I know, that perfectionism can creep in. And I have to remind myself on a daily, weekly basis, it's like my job is not to be an entertainer or, you know, like a source of happiness or even joy. I mean, my job is to like be safe and whole and present. And that can have, I mean, life has imperfections, right? So if I want to show up as a real person and have a real presence, I'm going to also be aware and in touch with my own flaws or things that are challenging me. Not that I'm having some deep conversation about life and death with my 3-year-old, but I'm also not trying to sugarcoat things. You know, it's interesting to me to think about how we, as working mothers, working parents, try and balance being with our children and also expressing the other parts of our personality. And if that's uncomfortable sometimes, is that even bad? You know, how much of that is parenting?
I would agree. I mean, I've learned a lot. I'm such a perfectionist in so many areas. And I've thought, you know, that if I didn't have fresh homemade organic cookies on the table every afternoon and some apple slices and here's, you know, this, that, and the other. I mean, I've done all of that. To the point that I completely ruined my adrenals for probably 5 years. But as I learn the beauty of imperfections in my kids and in my work, I can also learn to appreciate it in myself. Sometimes it's just Pika's takeout or whatever. Sometimes I just can't put like the late bloomer ranch pork on the table. I want to. I do. I try as often as I can, or the local beef, but I can't do it all. And squeezing things between kid events and meetings and all these things. So one of the questions you first asked was, how are you doing that? And one of the things that I've done, and I'm sure it's cost me probably a lot of money and probably not just money, but maybe respect from some people. I don't open my shop until not only my kids have gone to school, but I've had a good hour and a half to get some exercise or whatever else it is I need and want into my day. So my shop opens, I see clients from between 11 and 3:30. And that's because I need to think my thoughts alone for a moment. I need to work alone for a bit. And I'm going to leave and pick my kids up from school most days. And those are non-negotiables for me. And I wouldn't say that just because I'm at home with my kids and I'm all of a sudden immediately present and, you know, not distracted and those things. So that would not be true. But I try really hard to work when I'm at work and be home when I'm home and be as present as I can. And as your kids get older, they really actually pray that you're not as present as you want to be. They're trying to do something.
Yeah, right. They have their own lives at that point, right?
I could actually be working now because they don't know or care that I'm here.
I find it so fascinating, Christy, because maybe, just maybe, by reducing your hours and making those important choices and continuing to have the discipline to put yourself first, which I'm sure is difficult. I mean, you can let me know how you came to that realization that that was actually essential for you in your process. But for me, it's always difficult when I have to say, no, I'm not going to do that. I need to go for a walk, or I need to get more sleep, or I need to be away from people for an hour to recalibrate. Yeah, I'd like to think that maybe you've become more efficient. Maybe that's actually a way that you've honed your craft. And instead of thinking about it as, again, an obstacle or an impediment, oh, how much more could she get done if she didn't have these duties as a mother? Or how much more could she get done if she could have someone make all her meals for her or do all her laundry or something? Have you found that it's almost like a superpower?
Well, or someone make all her hats for her.
Yeah, or outsource it.
Or, you know, getting an employee to do everything here, you know, and part of being a perfectionist means you do want to do everything yourself. And I'm realizing my limitations on all of that. I can't double my revenue this year if I don't have help in my shop.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't have possibly a house cleaner a couple of times a year. I heard a long time ago, I think I was listening to NPR. I probably will never remember this, but she was a freelance writer for someone. I wish I could recall her name. I've thought about her many times. But she had 6 kids and she was a writer. And I heard her for the first time. This is not new. This is very old, especially by now, to put on your own oxygen mask first before putting on others. And just all of the bells went off in my head. And I thought, oh, wow, I've not been caring very well for myself since I had children. And I need to do a better job of that. And so coming from a really strong Christian background, that's really not the teaching that I grew up with. I grew up with a teaching of service first and self last. And I understand the humility that was supposed to be in that whole idea. But I actually think it's just the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. And I think that you can't possibly give what you don't have. And in fact, that's true for me when I sit down with a Bible and pray in the morning, you know, and write. First thing, I mean, I can't give the knowledge, insight, spiritual wisdom that I don't pick up first thing in the morning. You know, I can't give the energy that I don't get if I don't hike or get on a bike outside or lift weights or whatever it is. And so I juggle a lot in the morning, as every mother does. And I'm only doing it for 2 children. So I'm waking up kids while I'm putting in bacon. And I'm running outside to my garage gym and, you know, putting in a lift and, you know, some time on the bike trainer, you know, and then I'm running back in. This is after I've spent an hour sitting and reading and praying and talking and writing. And so I get up 2 hours early to take care of myself in the mornings. And if 2 hours early is sleeping in for you, well, more power to you, but it's not for me.
I always find that pre-dawn time of day, I think even if I were single and had no one to be responsible for, there's something so magical about the ability to come home to myself in that time. And I think everyone around me can sense when I haven't had that time.
Yeah.
In like subtle ways, you know, I'll have a shorter fuse, I'll be less creative. I have ADHD, and my journey with that has been fascinating over the years, just figuring out like what triggers it, what soothes it, what is it. And I definitely feel, yeah, you're nodding. Maybe you have similar experiences.
Yeah, I've never been diagnosed, but I'm self-diagnosed. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah, right. And certain things will completely crack me out and send me to Pluto. And then other times I'll be the most focused Zen person in the room. And I'm thinking, huh, that's interesting. I love what you're saying about just giving yourself that 2 hours. But of course, that 2 hours isn't free, right? I mean, you pay for that the night before. You pay for that meal prepping on whatever your day off is. Or was there like a breaking point that you reached where you said, no, the shop's opening at 11:30. It's closing at 3:30. I'm going on this walk for an hour. My phone is at home. When was enough enough?
I have really strong boundaries about the things I'm aware of. So what I was acutely aware of was that I did not want my, and this is no judgment to anyone else. It's just from my childhood experience. I knew I did not want my kids to be home alone. I didn't want them to come home alone. I don't think there's one single thing wrong with taking the bus. I think it builds character. My kids have done it plenty of times. But for me personally, I needed to be home when my kids got home. I needed it to heal some old wounds. Mm-hmm. So I knew from the very beginning, my kids were only, let's see, they were 10 and 9 or 10 and 8 when I started this business. So they were plenty old enough to be home by themselves, but that's not what I wanted. So I knew from day one, I was going to structure this business around my other life because I love making hats, but I'm not just a hat maker. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted it to be structured around the rest of my life. And the rest of my life at that time, especially, was my kids. I would say, in fact, just now I'm learning about myself that it's okay actually to let them be there some by themselves now. It's okay to put a little bit more time into my business now. You know, my daughter will drive in 3 weeks. It's sad, but it's exciting. It might give me an extra hour and a half at my shop a day. That's huge.
Yeah.
And so I would say I've always been like hyper focused on making sure that my business was modeled and sort of catered to the rest of my life. And I will see that tapering off actually probably as these kids get a bit older and start driving and working more and things like that. But I've kind of been that way since day one. There was never a breaking point. It was always going to be that way, period.
Yeah, interesting. I also feel that the way that I interact with my daughter and the daughter that I'm carrying, it's really like so much about healing myself, you know, showing up the way that I want to show up for the things that I really needed as a child, but didn't have access to, which is not a dig at my parents who are dealing with their own stuff, right? You know, I deeply feel that a lot of these choices as a mother are about being in touch with how I feel and what's true and honest for me, and using that as the modus operandi for my family instead of convincing myself that I'm doing everything for them. That's kind of a toxic thought for me, that I'm sacrificing so much.
When you say that, do you mean it's toxic for you to think that you're sacrificing so much for them? Or like, for instance, the thought that was going through my head when you were saying that was, for some mothers whose parents were always home or mother always was home, it might be that you feel guilt for working.
Right.
Or maybe you feel like, I don't want my kids at home all the time. I want my kids to go to daycare. And any of that is okay. You know, it's all great.
Totally.
This is just what my situation was.
I mean, you said it so well, because that is how I feel. I think if I had been born into a different family, I'd probably parent incredibly differently. And there'd be different, I don't want to call them gaps, but different, you know, wounds that are being scabbed over and a different balm to be applied. And for me, there is this synergy between my work and my marriage and my family life. They're so similar and they're like a reflection. I can't, if I'm not doing well at work, it also means I'm probably not doing well at home. Like, they show up in both places. And it's not because,
oh, sure,
I look at like success, air quotes, as impacting my family. It's more just that when I when I show up honestly with integrity as my whole self, with all of my messiness and my impulsiveness and my questions and my discontents, you know, and I make space for all of that, as well as my skills and my artistry and my vibrancy, when I'm really doing a good job of making space for all of that stuff, things are more harmonious in both sides of the equation. So I meant that I can't tell myself that I want to have my daughter on the farm with me several days a week because I'm doing it, quote, for her. No, I'm really doing that for me. So I can have this relationship with her that, yes, is benefiting her, and I'm with her, and we're together, and we're solving problems together, and it's joyful, and she loves it. But I'm not deluding myself into thinking that I'm giving up so much because I have this unbearable burden of being a mother. That's the toxic thought for me. And that's not to say that there aren't overwhelming things about parenting and that it's not real for some people to feel completely overcome by the responsibility. I'm not trying to downplay that. Definitely do not think that.
Yeah.
But for me personally, it's just not in service to what I'm trying to do and where I am to be in a narrative that motherhood is an impediment or that I can't have these real experiences in my work life and my home life if I'm going to be a mother because I have to get these oatmeal cookies out like you were talking about. And like, oh, I would go and do this other thing, but it's just imperative that I have these oatmeal cookies on the counter. That doesn't get me where I need to go in a heart-centered way.
This episode of The Soft Focus is brought to you by Late Bloomer Ranch, my farm and ranch in eastern Idaho, where we raise meat, eggs, wool, and cut flowers of the utmost quality with integrity to match. You can hear more about the ranch, our practices, and the why behind our premium products in episode 10 of this podcast with ranch manager Eliana Arujo. We now ship flower essences from our flower garden, perfect for altering your auric field and impacting the subtle body, yarn from our registered flock of Luster Long Wool sheep for all your knitting, crocheting, and fiber arts, and our signature bloom boxes, chock full of our truly exceptional meat to stock your freezer with the best of the best. We ship all over the continental United States. Supporting Late Bloomer Ranch is supporting the Soft Focus podcast, and we are so glad you're here. Check us out on latebloomerranch.com and on Instagram at latebloomerranch. Now, back to the episode.
When I started this podcast, I really wanted to talk to people who were living life with a sense of intention. And it's not that we always perfectly adhere to our intention, because of course, life is always teaching us things and pushing us off our path and redirecting us. And it is messy and it is soupy, but I think that's why I've always admired your work and wanted to connect with you deeper, was that I see that play out in, you're not trying to have this part of Christy over here at this corner and then this part of Christy show up over here. It's that there has to be this like wholeness that we pursue, however ineffectively. Or at least that's me. Some days my wholeness seems to be left somewhere else. We've spent a lot of time talking about your experience being a parent and then starting this business and knowing from the moment that you began it that it had to fit in with your life as a mother. How have the skills or the experiences of being a mother shaped you as an artist? Do you see synergies there?
I'd say, honestly, it's the opposite. It's the way this business has taught me how to mother.
Wow. Tell me more.
Well, so I really feel like I came into this business with a full like adrenal burnout. Just to give you a little context, I lived in a 900 square foot cabin on the edge of the forest here in Jackson. Like I said, my ex-husband left that to us when we divorced, and we were there probably 8 or 9 years after he left. He was a hunting guide, so he always brought home meat. When he left, I started hunting, and I say that loosely. It's not like I was so amazing. I just needed meat. The same with gathering wood, gardening, you know, as much as we can grow here, working, kids, you know, we had to spend a lot of time outside. We were always dirty and we had chickens, you know, just a little like all of our friends had, you know, I mean, all the people I'm friends with lived exactly the same way for the most part. I was a cook, you know, and I wanted everything to be perfect all the time. I wanted the house to be perfect and I wanted the kids to be. And I don't mean like orderly. I mean like rustic and mountainy. I don't know if I can explain it. I had this obsession with the romance of being where I was. And I just labored all the time over it. And it was that magical place for anyone who came in. I mean, everyone loved it, thought it was the most wonderful place they'd ever been. I remember shortly after my divorce, or maybe it was after my husband left, my daughter turned 4 and she had a little birthday party and I had pneumonia and I made pork tacos for 33 people and, you know, 2 cakes. And, you know, it's just like always going above and beyond. And I remember by the time I started the hat company, I couldn't even get excited about their birthdays, except that they were born. The thought of having to make a cake or having to have a person over or any of these things, they overwhelm me so much. And so what I mean by this hat company was I probably had a pretty fixed mindset back then. I really didn't understand how much you can change the neural pathways in your brain if you focus on certain things. And I was probably focusing on some things that weren't positive for me. I really didn't know how to overcome my obstacles a lot. And so I would say hat making, I had to do this. I lost my job 2 weeks after I moved into my first hat making shop when I planned to do it as a side hustle. It was not an option.
Wow.
And so I would say that hat making taught me that a growth mindset is a good thing. Yeah, I would say that it's been hat making that's taught me how to mother better, really.
Interesting. So you mean like bringing that growth mindset into your interactions with your family?
Yeah, bringing them into my interactions with my family, understanding that things that you really want and value and long for take a lot of work and time, but also that it's okay to rest. And I think I just had a very fixed idea about what life needed to look like with children. And I've grown in what that looks like for me now.
Wow, that's beautiful.
I think I had a very much a little house on the prairie mindset for my life back then. And I've let my kids teach me how to be more progressive and that's a good thing. And it can also bring me a lot of rest and renewal my life.
Yeah, I love what you're saying, just that when you were open to changing your perspective was then able to be changed, right? It sounds so simple, but in my experience, I can look back at different chapters in my own life where I thought I was open to change, or I thought I was working towards a growth orientation when really I was so fixated on how I wanted something to look. I mean, I'm a hopeless romantic in all things. I want that first sip of coffee in the morning out of the mug that my friend made me as a wedding present to like be the most sensual experience of my life. Like I fall victim to that all the time.
Yeah.
And in some ways it's motivating for me and it can build so much gratitude. And then in other ways it can be an obstacle where life is not about adhering to an ideal as much as it is, in my opinion, about just like doing our best. Isn't that so trite? It sounds so trite. But if I can go out there and say like, well, I gave a damn and I tried,
yeah,
then I can live from a place of honesty and integrity. So I love what you're saying, that by just simply acknowledging that you were in this adrenal burnout and you had kind of lost the reason for why you were baking 30 tacos and 2 cakes, that just by like even coming into that realization, you already started this bigger, more powerful change in your life.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, that adrenal failure just went further and further down the road. This is candid, but I actually had to go to the emergency room one time for a panic attack.
Wow.
And I thought it was, you know, all heart related. And I was probably in year 2 or 3 of my business. I was about to get married for a second time. And so the doctor asked me, are you under any stress? And I was like, I don't know. You know, and I started listing like, we just moved from the house my children were born in. You know, I just expanded my hat shop. I'm getting married in like 2 months. Our dog died. My daughter's starting 6th grade, middle school. Yeah, maybe, you know, maybe a little.
So correct me if I'm wrong, or I'm projecting here, but maybe you have a shared experience. Hearing you share that, A, I can totally see myself, because part of that's a trauma response and an adaptation, right? It's like nothing is going to get in my fucking way unless I let it.
Right.
So I am not going to tell you that I'm stressed out because I'm going to survive. But when I am personally in that space, I don't feel creative, Christy. I don't feel inspired. This is another major area I wanted to hear from you is how do you stay creative while you're also growing a business? Growing a business can be so strategic. Before we started recording, I was talking to you a little bit about my growth in the marketing part of my business and my process trying to find marketing that felt good. How have you safeguarded your own connection to beauty and romance and creativity so it can propel your art forward while also saying, yeah, I do have stuff on my plate and I am growing and I am accomplishing tasks? Like, where do those things merge in your life?
That's great. It's something I've been wrestling with for years. I mean, anyone who knows me knows this is like constantly the thing. It's like, how do I grow and still do everything myself? And then I'll say, you can't do everything yourself. That's your ego. You have to have help. But recently in January, I decided I'd never had a business plan. And I decided I was going to try to formulate some plan for growth. And I spent almost all of January coming up with ideas and attempting to carry them out. And what ended up happening was I felt very disconnected creatively. I start to really have moments of doubt. And when I do that, like, you're too late to the game. Your work's not relevant. You know, and I really hear all these voices that just tell me how well I'm not doing. But when I put my hands on a hat and I click the steam pedal, or I put this, you know, the sandpaper to the hat, or I start to sew, or I cut a sweatband, it's the most meditative work. Mm-hmm. It immediately fuels my creativity. It's similar to cooking for me, cooking when no one's home and I'm fine and the jazz music's on, you know, and it's a beautiful dish. And then I remember this work is valid. You're doing a good job. What's ironic about all this is that I was in sales for 20, probably years before hat making in various different areas. And I would say hats are something I have never tried to sell. I have actually said to people, listen, if it's not your favorite thing to grab when you walk out the door, I wouldn't spend this much money on it. Buy it only if you love it. Please don't buy it if you don't love it. I don't advertise. I always say, and so people are probably sick of hearing me say this, I liken myself to a beer joint in the middle of nowhere that serves the best food and the best drinks and only 10 people can fit inside. There's always a line at the door. So I'm struggling with trying to say very small batch and also grow, where to let people in to help and where not to. And I have a wonderful team that's been with me for 2 to 3 years that they come and go in seasons based on their other seasonal work. Mm-hmm. And they're all excellent. I just don't have them here often enough to suit myself. And so I'm trying to figure out where do I bring someone else in? Is that, do I need someone to just do the shipping? You know, does someone need to answer my emails? Oh, that feels weird because it's not me.
I mean, this is where the rubber meets the road, because I also am growing my business in ways that are really exciting. And then there are also ways that are more anxiety inducing than exciting. And I know from past experience that if I don't at least have a couple days a week doing the chore type work on my farm, it doesn't matter how much strategy I have, I lose my mojo. I like lose myself. And is it the highest and best use of my time to go out there and weed sweet peas? Maybe not, but that's only if you're looking at it from a transactional point of view.
Because that's exactly right.
The other side of it, like you were saying, the meditative experience of, you know, making a sweatband or having your foot on the steam machine, I feel that. And there's just this essence of chop wood, carry water.
100%. It's my favorite book.
Yes, exactly. Right. So it's, I mean, and that's probably why you did it in the first place. And I think it's an infinitely rich topic of how do we both serve our businesses, but also have our businesses serve us so that, you know, I don't want to die a martyr to my farm and leave my children with just like crazy amounts of financial wreckage. You know, I need to build something for my family, but I'm really interested in talking about the creative side of, and that I was what I wanted my root of my question to be, is like maintaining that creative juice and carving out the time for the things that connect you to that creativity. Because if you lose it, no one else in your business will have it.
That's right. Yeah. And you know, what do I want to leave here? What do I want to leave with this business? You know, my kids don't seem one bit interested in it, but they're very young. Who knows? Chopwood Carry Waters, I don't know if you've read the book. I know it's an old saying. It's one of my favorite little short stories. And it's part of what I still need to do every day. And I think in the end, I read a book this month for the second time called The War of Art. I don't know if you've read it. It's excellent. Pressfield. And it just reminded me, okay, you're spending a little too much time in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And what that's causing is that resistance. So just go do the thing. Go put your hands on the work. And today the work was filling out a bunch of applications and talking about some grants and shipping, printing out things like that. Today was not any hat making. And I'm learning that it's just dividing that work up during the week, 3 to 4 days of hands-on and 1 to 2 days of maybe building a fire at my house and having an office day, so to speak. And I'm trying to get a system. Systems are also something my husband always preaches. You need a system, systems, systems. And with art, there's only so many systems you can put in place, but there are some.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not putting those in place, it does make things more difficult. So he's right about that. So finding for me, where are the systems that are sort of replicable all the time? You know, we can almost always do this. Servicing our machines every Monday, just going to keep things around a lot longer. We do shipping on Tuesday, Thursday. That's when we ship. You know, just some systems that feel a lot more like order can be very impulsive and very distracted. But as far as systems where hats go, for me, I haven't been able to find a system. I mean, I make hats the same way every time. But felt, it has a mind of its own and it's been dyed and not always consistently. And it's maybe from a different manufacturer than this one that I just made, not usually, but maybe. And it might not want to be this flat hat, or a variation of different things could happen. And so once you get down to a certain part of the process, it really is like, well, we did it the same way we always do, but this is what came out of it. And I personally haven't been able to find that sort of infallible system that works every single time on every single felt exactly the same way.
I love this dynamic. I have a friend, she was actually on the podcast. Her name's Megan Wallace James. She works with ritualized aesthetics in the interior and the exterior. So she's like always looking at the energetics of people's homes and decor. She's fascinating. Anyone who's interested, go listen to her episode. She's a genius. But she always talks about having really strong boundaries and wild freedom within those boundaries. Listening to you, Christy, I can kind of hear that mantra in my head. It's like these systems exist theoretically to give you more time and leeway and leverage to do the parts of the work that really work for you. What are some systems, whether it's your 2 hours of reading and praying and writing or your daily hour-long walk, what are some of like the key systems, however loose we use that term, that really help you kind of feel like yourself and help you come to your work the most Christy?
Are you talking about home or work or all?
I'm talking about all, because sometimes for me, it's the stuff at home that I do that impacts my work or the stuff at work that impacts my home.
Well, so for me, I try to do exercise sort of through the week. You know, I kind of know what's happening from day to day, strength training, hiking. I do a couple of days of hiking, snowking a week, reading and praying and writing, sort of a brain dump first thing in the morning. So those things are sort of my home routine, breakfast, lunches. I make all the meals at my house, which is kind of high time I quit doing. My kids really need to learn and step in. But yeah, but I do make breakfast, lunch, and dinner at my house. And so breakfast and lunch first thing in the morning and send that out with them. And then, you know, as far as routines go here, you know, trying to do service on machines on a particular day, keeping shipping days the same. And then because my health is so steady right now and unpredictable right now, I have about 20 hats in the works, which is more than ever. I don't really have that many in the works right now. But when I have one of the gals that comes in for me, sometimes when she can come, she might block 8 hats that day because that's the only time she's going to be able to be here for 2 weeks. That part of the system is not as regulated as I wish it was right now. And I would say in a future, either apprentice or employee, I'm looking for some of that more steady, systematic, operational type stuff to happen in the shop that isn't right now.
And that helps you feel creative. That security helps you feel liberated to go be you.
Well, honestly, what helps me feel creative is being the only person in here.
Interesting. So do you block that out?
I'm in here so often alone that's where my creativity flows, is when I'm by myself. But I understand in order to meet some of my other goals in life, I can't be in here by myself all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so having some predictability and some systems in place when I do have other folks in here is something that I'm looking for in 2024. It's what I'm putting out there.
Cool. And it's a good segue into my next question. I know we don't have infinite time. It's like fascinating to me that you find the most creativity by yourself, because from the outside looking in, I see you as this master networker with other artisans who you're bringing into your shop, you're collaborating with, you're supporting. You are always, to me, a kind of like nexus of other people in the sort of vintage Western artisanal slow batch world. Is that something that comes naturally to you? Was that always part of your vision? Or is that something that has kind of just cropped up as part of being a hat maker? Can you talk to me a little bit about that and those relationships?
Yeah. So those things have all happened very organically. I wouldn't say that I set out with, like, you know, certainly when I first started, you know, I made a list of like, I'd love to make a hat for this person, you know, and honestly, they've almost all showed up at my door, which is very odd, but also how it works. I enjoy those people. I mean, I just hung up with Jillian Lukuski 7 minutes before our podcast with just like cramming it all in. Laura from Revival yesterday for an hour. And I would say they've been doing this so much longer than me. I'm certainly the one learning from them always. And I feel super honored and humbled to be even in their presence and in their little world, all of them. And I want that in my shop. I love the energy of having those women in my shop, or having phone conversations with them, or being connected with them on social media or whatever. But my true creativity for the hat itself, or for the reel, or for whatever has to happen for my work, I have too much ADD for that, if I'm not alone.
Mm-hmm.
I might glean an inspiration of something from someone when we're together. And that's magic. I love that. I need that too. And I'm fed by that. But my true creativity, I would say, happens only when I'm by myself.
So through connecting with these other women makers, which became apparent because you were on your own creative path, that's where the idea came to collaborate more and to bring them into your shop and to do pop-ups together.
Totally. You know, Laura's in Bozeman, so she's in a bigger town. You know, but we live in Jackson. It's magic. It's special. And, you know, I have this beautiful space that God so graciously granted me to have for the time being. And I was like tiptoeing a little bit because I don't even like saying it, they're supposed to tear this building down.
Mm.
I was like really just holding on to it like this, like, oh, I can't have anything. I don't want to show anyone anything because it could be gone in a minute. I'm like, no, hands wide open. Right now it's yours. Someday it might not be. So use it.
Mm-hmm.
Use it and invite all the people in, all the people with all their wares and things. And let's use this. Otherwise, it's sort of like blasphemy to have it and hold it real tight and not share it. Doesn't feel right. So I would say that's when I started saying, bring your things and come here. My friends want to see your wares.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And there's a big community here. And so friends have done that and it's been wonderful. And my cup is so full when those folks leave because they usually stay at my house too, you know, in the whole nine yards. And I wouldn't say that doesn't spark creativity for sure and fuel me with ideas. Like the real magic is like hands-on for me.
I love it, Christy. Thank you so much. I'm thinking about that analogy you had to being that lone bar 10-seater restaurant in the middle of nowhere. And just how I think when people buy hats from you, they're not just buying a hat, they're buying this whole romantic little slice of community and connection. And when you're not connected to yourself, it's really hard to give that away. When you aren't putting that gas mask on, it's really hard to transmit it to other people. And I love that you shared all this with us today. And I'm thinking a lot about the magic of knowing yourself well enough to say, I'm going to do this pop-up, I'm going to collaborate with these amazing makers, and then I'm going to have 2 or 3 days to myself to get my hands on some beaver felt and start the cycle over again.
Yeah, chop wood, carry water.
Yeah, exactly. So where can people find you? What do you have going on?
Yeah, well, I'll be at Old Salt this year in Montana. That's the weekend of June 22nd.
And fun.
I'm very excited to have been invited back to that. So that's one large venue where you can see some amazing artists and camp and music. And I would encourage you, if you don't know about Old Salt Festival, to check that out. I'm at 330 North Glenwood in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And you can come get an appointment and come for a fitting or come check the shop out or come shoot the bull. And I'm at Christy at singhatco.com for my email, and Sing Hat Company is my Instagram.
Thank you so much. Yeah, Old Salt looks awesome. And I hope people do check you out because you're always sharing great things and you have a beautiful website and a beautiful shop.
Well, thank you, Corinne. I am looking forward to making a hat for you. And I'm so thrilled to be on your podcast and so thankful you asked and put up with my throat today.
Oh my gosh, the pleasure's all mine. Thank you for braving your burgeoning cold to do this. So it's been wonderful.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much for joining me today. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. Please reach out with any comments or with other guests you'd like to hear. You can find us at latebloomerranch.com or on Instagram at latebloomerranch. You can also drop me an email at hello@latebloomerranch.com. I'd love to hear from you. See you next time.